So we're,
every
we're
time gone. Brandon Scorlo, Brandon Scorlo.
No, no. We're not doing that.
That may be the best Freudian slip of all time. anytime he scores a point, you're going to be
Brandon Rockets Richard Carlo.
Welcome to episode 81 of season 2 of Bruisin' Bruins, the Hockey Podcast Network podcast presented by Bruins Diehard, sponsored by DraftKings, a drinkable podcast you can taste, a hard listen, according to Drew's dad. I am Chris Gear. I'm back from vacation. I'm in San Diego. I'm here with my co-host Drew, and we have two guests today. We have Cam Hasbrook.
From the Bruisin' Bruins podcast. Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
And we have my close personal friend, Logan Mullen, who I've met one time at a wedding.
We go way back.
How you doing, Logan?
I am just lovely.
All right. Drinks. Cam, fire it off.
All right. Well, Drew and I are going to have a little bit of overlap here, but we just stopped at the very fine establishment. It was the gas station across the street from Drew's apartment. And we picked up some Truly seltzer teas. I'm not sure if it's tea or seltzer. It's listed as seltzer according to the can, but it also clearly says tea on it. So I don't know where you draw the line between tea and seltzer, but if things go according to plan here, we're going to rip through most of this pack during this episode. So it should be a good one. So we're going to start out with the strawberry tea, which I did crack open a second ago.
More than a second.
Yeah, I'm already like halfway through it. Maybe I'll just finish it during the review. Here we go. Drinkability. You know, for something like iced tea, anything sweet like this, I feel like it's going to have like high drinkability at first because you can just slug them. But you got to crush as many as you can before the sugar headache catches up to you. So I'm going to start with like a 33 on drinkability, but I think that's going to go down by the time we're halfway through this pack. Taste, you can certainly taste it. You cannot taste the alcohol, which increases the drinkability for sure. I'm going to put the drinkability somewhere around 35. You can slug these things, so we'll see if that stands up to the test of time here. But I think a 35 sounds about right. Drew, what do you think? Are you gonna dispute me at all here? Which one do you got?
Oh, I got the peach, and the drinkability is significantly lower. I'm gonna go with like a 25. I thought I like the peach iced teas. I forget the brand. Just peach iced tea. There's like little the mixes that they got. I don't like this so much.
What are these rankings out of?
It's out of 37 for the one and only.
Okay, there you go.
So I'll go whatever I said. I think 23 drinkability is what I said. Either way, I'll go with 23. Tasteability, yeah, you can taste it. I'll go full 37 on that.
I feel like as a friend of the pod, Logan deserves to know what this rating scale is. Most times we keep people in the dark, but I feel like we can fill you in here.
It's 1 to 37 based on drinkability and tasteability. So not necessarily does it taste good or not, just can you taste it?
Yeah.
And not necessarily any other thing other than can you drink it? I don't know if I've ever rated anything a 1 or a 0 in drinkability, but I know Drew has.
I don't know what. Probably the pumpkin.
It was the white pumpkin.
Yeah. Like the all-time low.
Literally the worst thing I've ever drank, and I've drank some weird shit, I'm pretty sure. So,
all right, Logan, you got anything for us today?
I have a Molson Ice.
Oh, yeah.
So
coming in hot.
I love Molson. I've actually never had Molson Ice before. But my friend got some for me the other day, and he was like, all they had at the liquor store was ice. And cards on the table, I'm usually fearful of drinking these because whenever I have Molson's, I'll have like 7 in a sitting. And the alcohol volume is much higher on this one than just your run-of-the-mill Molson lager. So I'm apparently they taste the same, but I'm afraid to lead myself astray, if you will. So Molson's Rock. Yep, this tastes just like the regular Molson. So, drinkability, I can definitely drink this. So that would get a full 37 from me, and I absolutely can taste this. So I'll give it like a 36 because I don't want to give straight 37s because honestly, I'm still very confused about the metric in which you guys established this. So
we don't lie to you. We just throw chaos.
We've had the same beer on like multiple podcasts in a row rated completely differently. So it's not a big deal. All right. So I forgot to load up the beer fridge today because I had it unloaded for vacation time. So I made myself a little cocktail, and in my weird foggy brain, I started making a Negroni, but realized that I pulled out some rye. So I kind of made a combo between a Negroni and a Manhattan, kind of using the Campari as bitters. Which it is a bitter, but it is like kind of an unusual one to use for a Manhattan. But let's give it a try. Yeah, that's absolutely delicious. It's I served it on ice more like a Negroni than a Manhattan. So it's the drinkability way higher than it would be if I had just served it shaken. Go with 21 on drinkability because you know there's a lot of alcohol in this. Tasteability going to be a little bit lower than it would be if I had served it up, but it's you can still taste it. You can taste every ingredient in this, so we'll give it a 17.
Nice. All right. Going I've been rocking the whiskey sours lately.
Oh yeah.
Picked up some materials for those, which definitely. Definitely high drinkability and taste on there, but same thing. Like you get into a couple of those and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, that can be trouble.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, our agenda is pretty wide open, but I did want to briefly mention the strange circumstances by which we arrived. So I was at my dear friend Nate and Ivy's wedding. Part of the reason why I was on vacation back in Massachusetts, they had a Labor Day weekend wedding, and I had been hanging out with them back in May when they were moving from Massachusetts to Vermont, and I was kind of helping them pack up a little bit. And Nate mentioned to me, "Hey, do you know who Logan Mullen is?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think we follow each other on Twitter. Like, I don't know him personally, but he's like, yeah, I work with his wife. Like she's singing. Like I've done some production for her." And I was like, "Oh, that's cool. Like weird small world." And I texted Lauren Campbell, our friend who works with Logan. I said, "This is pretty strange, huh?" And then lo and behold, months later, I'm at my friend's wedding and this man walks up to me, and I was a little caught off guard because people had already been walking up to me because I was holding a clue to a scavenger hunt that was going around.
Yeah.
And so anybody walking up to me, I just assumed that they were looking for a clue. And so Logan walks up and he goes, "Chris?" I'm like, "Yeah, here's the clue."
I was like, "All right, this guy's big league in me."
And then he's like, "No, I'm Logan." I was like, "Oh, Logan. All right." And then we had a nice conversation. We actually ended up sitting at the bride and groom's table for the dinner, and
subtle flex.
Yeah, had a good. Yeah, well, we're all very good friends of the. No better friends at this wedding than our crews.
Found out about your interaction with Nate at my wedding. So we were, because Nate and Ivy were sitting with my wife Megan and I at like our table. Our thing was pretty casual, so people are just coming and going. And Nate was like, "Hey, do you know Chris Gere?" I was like, and I gave him probably the exact same answer that you did. It's like, I don't know him personally, but I think we follow each other on Twitter. And he's like, yeah, like we go way back. And I was like, all right. But
you're like on Twitter? So great. We've been following each other since 09.
So he's actually another podcast co-host of mine on my other podcast. And Cam and Drew will shortly be appearing on that one on our hockey movie episode.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, you'll get to.
You've been talking about that for like a year now.
Well, so the difference is I actually brought it up with my co-hosts and we're going to make that happen in the coming month or so.
It sounds like a similar vibe to Brews and Bruins. If you haven't had an idea a year ago and you just brought it to your co-host.
All right, so yeah, Logan works for Nesson, as we maybe mentioned, but so he is the final word on all opinions on this podcast today, and we did talk a bunch of hockey at the wedding, and you had one particular take that I really wanted to dive into.
Yeah, you're like, you and I will be aligned on this, and then you're just gonna have to like fight off Cam and Drew.
So
I have a feeling I know where this is going based on.
I've been mentioning. On previous podcasts, when we're talking like Jack Eichel trades or other things like outlook for this season, that maybe Brandon Carlo's a guy who's a little bit overrated, and maybe I don't have such a hardline take as Logan does, but if you want to run with this, go ahead.
Well, my take has generally been, well, I think the line that you're probably referring to is that Brandon Carlo is basically a name brand version of Kevin Miller, where like where he's fine, but the thing that
I felt physical pain in my heart. Ugh.
Well, first of all, there's not a single the eye test never checked out for me with Brandon Carlo, and then I was very relieved to see that he is perhaps the opposite of whatever an analytics darling is. And so when he was younger, I used to rip on him all the time. And my thing was like, he obviously provides basically zero offense and he's supposed to be this like very stout stay at home defenseman, but I've never seen anybody make more like mental mistakes than Brandon Carlo, like just looking completely lost in front of the net. And so my thing is like, well, if he's not going to give you a lot of offense, then he better be really good on defense. And like, or even if you're like a knuckle dragger and you're all about the physical stuff, like he's really not that physical of a player for a guy his size. And so I've come around on him, and I told Chris this, like the one sort of watershed moment that sort of brought my take on Brandon Carlo a bit back more to like the neutral or indifferent end of the spectrum was, and I should have looked up the game, but I think it was game 5 of the series against the Blue Jackets in 19 when he leveled Panarin in open ice. And literally if he like he did a body check in the defensive zone, and if he missed them, like Panarin would have been wide open on net and probably sent the game to overtime. And I was like, wow, that's like Brandon Carlo making a very intelligent play. But I honestly don't have much of an issue with the term on his contract, but I don't think he is as special as perhaps many Bruins fans would like to make him out to be.
I think that's a reasonable take. I mean, I think you're underselling him a little bit personally. I mean, I will let my bias show here. I was like a lifelong defenseman from like in Pee-wees when they were like, hey, you play center and we don't have any defensemen, so you're going to play defense now.
Okay.
And I was not exactly as a puck mover, but I was never an offensively minded player. I was always kind of stay at home. So I definitely tend to like appreciate those players maybe a little bit more than I should. The Kevin Miller comparison, definitely. Yeah, I think that one was a little bit of a smack to it. I think you're getting way more defensive responsibility and just, I mean, you really feel like if you had Brandon Carlo and Kevin Miller and, you know, on the same team, which obviously I had for quite a while. Are you going to look me in the eye and tell me that you virtually, by the way, you're going to look me in the eye virtually and tell me that you're substituting one for one and you don't see any difference there?
No. So I
you're getting value wise.
So I think Kevin Miller is a slightly worse version of Brandon Carlo, but I think Brandon Carlo this is gonna sound so bad. His ceiling is a low end second pairing defenseman. Like if you line up every regular second pairing defenseman in the NHL, so it's gonna be what, 64 guys. For me, Brandon Carlo is somewhere in like the high 40s, low 50s, probably. And that's like that's the epitome of a straw man argument. But like I think Brandon Carlo would be like a better served as a plus third pairing defenseman. And so you can say that's either a Bruins issue more so than a Brandon Carlo issue, but I think that his like he was completely sheltered by Zdeno Chara his rookie year, which I think ultimately did not do him any service because people got a false, in my opinion, false sense of belief about what he actually is. I think if you put him on your third pairing and you find somebody to go with him, I don't know who that would be. I guess Mike Riley still, right? But that is probably an effective third pairing, but I think he gets exposed a little much when he has to face like top six forwards.
Yeah, so if we're looking at the evolving hockey page for Brandon Carlo over the last three seasons combined, his offensive percentile rank is 12, and he's in the 12th percentile. That tracks. Defensively, he's in the 77th, and I feel like if you ask Bruins fans what they think, where they think he falls, he would probably be somewhere in the like 80 to 90 range, maybe higher depending on who you're asking. Whereas if you're looking at a guy who often gets compared to him, like Adam Larsson,
that is so unfair.
Adam Larsson's somewhere in the like upper 90s percentile on defense.
And I don't mean to even be disrespectful to Brandon Carlo, because I think he's a fine enough player. I think his role, I think people have assumed that he's just this very high end second pairing guy because he came in basically playing first pairing as a rookie and getting a ton of ice time. And he was playing with a still very, very good Zdeno Chara. And so I think ultimately he's obviously an NHL player. I think he is a low end second pairing, high end third pairing guy.
I'm willing to compromise. I think for me, I would put him more to like a, I agree. He's not a, I don't think he's a first pairing defenseman. I think especially with, where personally I would like to see the Bruins go, which is faster, more offensive driven counterattack. That's not where he fits in necessarily. I would be interested to see, and I'm willing to view him with a more critical eye this year. We have talked about this a lot this season, so I do want to kind of zero in on his play specifically versus how the team plays with him, which I think is more of how I've kind of viewed him in the past. Which is a good point when he was playing with a very good Chara or somebody like Mike Riley who can drive that offense and maybe mask some of his inabilities in that sense. But I do think you are underselling maybe a little bit on the defensive guy. I feel like he is pretty reliable. I think he's nothing to write home about when it comes to, you know, I wouldn't build a team around him. And we talked about this maybe 2 weeks ago where if there is a piece that is probably overvalued, I would agree with that, and that the Bruins could move, I wouldn't hate them moving him. But I think he's one of those players where, like, you kind of know what you're getting, and I think that's sounds like a bad thing, but I don't think it's the worst. I mean, I think he could be an effective penalty killer. I think as a maybe mid-tier second liner, again, it depends on the kind of the direction you want to see the defense go, which again, I'm all for. Like, I do like Brandon Carlo a lot. I like what he can bring to the table. But that being said, I don't think that stay-at-home classic defenseman role that doesn't provide much offense is going to have a place in the NHL in the next decade or so, or beyond maybe a third stopgap, you know, line guy where you can, hey, he's not our go-to guy, but if we need somebody because of injury or something that we need to plug in there and we're not too worried about it, I think that's the kind of play style he has, but I do think he has a fair amount of defensive value, but I am willing to kind of bring out the critical lens this season and dive into that a little bit more because I haven't, you know, sat there many times and been like, I'm going to watch Brandon Carlo tonight and like really see, which I guess kind of speaks to his game, right? That's kind of the point you're making.
Like, you know what sounds like a fun exercise? Watching Brandon Carlo.
Well, so I would say do this. So, because this is the thing that kills me is he to me is just not very good in front of the net, and watch every Bruins defenseman for like a shift or two and watch how long when they're defending the net, they're looking at the puck. And I promise you, Brandon Carlo will be looking at the puck twice as long as everybody else, which is why I feel like he always gets burned on the doorstep.
Maybe he's just a huge hockey fan. He just loves hockey.
He just loves great hockey. Yeah.
Ooh, I'm dude, I got the best team in the house, and I'm going to pay $9 for it. What do you
if you're playing with Patrice Bergeron in the defensive zone, and the puck is out there and Patrice is going after the puck, what are you watching? You're watching Patrice.
Yeah. I'm definitely not watching the guy right next to the goalie who's just waiting for a pass to get feathered.
I personally am fine with Carlo on that second pair. I think I in the past I've said on a bad team he'd be a first pair guy. I'm willing to humble myself a little bit and say on the Kraken he'd be a first pair guy.
No, because Adam Larson would be the first pair defenseman because Adam Larson is better than him.
The better version of Brandon Carlo.
But I think I'm totally fine with him on the second pair. I think he's definitely been kind of the balancing act for a lot of those offensive defensemen. Like you look at him and Krug. Pretty weak defensively, but he has all that, like he's your power play quarterback and everything.
Yeah.
And Brandon Carlo kind of, supports him in that role and kind of masks his weaknesses, and Krug also masked Carlo's weaknesses on the offensive side. I would like to see what happens when it's more of a two-way kind of guy. I know we saw some of him in Mike Riley, but I'd like to see something like that for a full season where it is a balanced pair. But personally, I think he could be overvalued throughout the league as, oh, this is a young defenseman. He is known for his defensive play, and we want to go get this guy. I think, yeah, he might be a little overvalued in that sense, but I still think he has a role to play on this Bruins team right now. And yes, I would part with him if you're trading for the right piece. But at the same time, I'm not just going to toss him up on the block. I think he's a bargaining chip rather than a, hey, he's for sale kind of guy, because I do think he still has some value to this team this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Cam, I meant to say to your point, too, about like that type of player that's like all defense and no offense being gone in the next 10 years. I do wonder if Carlo kind of knows that to a degree in the sense that he knows that his game has to evolve, because when he was healthy this year, it was – at times startling how frequently he was shooting. Like he used to, and maybe that was just the product of playing with Krug all the time. But I remember watching the first like month of the season, whenever Carlo was playing, and all of a sudden he's taking clappers from the point, like every trip down the ice. And it's like, I have not ever gotten used to seeing this from him. So I think that makes him a way more valuable player. Like he doesn't have to score. And if he's with a Mike Riley type, like he doesn't even have to really facilitate all that much, but at least do something instead of getting the puck at the blue line and then just shuffling it across to your partner.
To that point, I've generally been throwing out most of the things that like short season last year, a lot of people not playing the same way that they normally would just because it's such a weird schedule and everything. But you know, take it with a grain of salt, but evolving hockey last year had Brandon Carlo at 54th percentile defensively, but 49th percentile offensively. So there is maybe a shift in his game or just small sample size bullshit.
Yeah, I do. I mean, like it does come down to sample size inevitably at some point, but I do remember kind of midway through the season talking about that. Like he does seem like he's trying to put the gas down a little bit offensively. Yeah. Whether that's actually something he's capable of long-term remains to be seen. And I guess through that lens, this is a pretty important season for him as far as, you know, can he actually sustain that? And obviously you'd like to see those gains without the drop-off necessarily in defensive stats and metrics and that sort of thing. But
sure,
if he can add at least some tangible value offensively, I think that would change the conversation a little bit, because I you know, obviously his game is his defense, right? But if he can add something production-wise, that makes him a lot more valuable, especially in today's NHL. But like Chris said, small sample size last year. We'll see what he can do over the course of a full 82-game season.
I would
rooting for him.
I would like to see if Carlo has kind of like the resurgence that not the same resurgence that Kevin Miller had, because then Kevin Miller broke his leg like 17 times.
Avoid that.
But where Kevin Miller suddenly like was skating better, even with a broken leg, like he just really upped his speed there and he upped some of his offensive play. I would like to see if Carlo can do that, because he's still pretty young. I mean, he's entering that kind of prime age right now, but he's still fairly young. I think there's definitely some room for growth. So I'd like to see if he can work on that offensive side of the game, or even if that's just puck carrying and finding opportunities that way. Like you said, Logan, not just, you know, dumping it over to his defensive partner around the boards or whatever. I think there is room for growth there, obviously, and I think he has the potential to grow there. And I think if you see even just a little bit of growth there on the offensive side, I think he becomes extremely valuable to the Bruins.
All right. More Carlo talk after the break.
The Bruins and Bruins podcast is sponsored by DraftKings. Week one may be over, but the season's just getting started at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the National Football League. To kick off week two, DraftKings is giving new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet $1 or more on any football game. Head to the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 or more on any week two game to receive $200 in free bets instantly. If Sportsbook is not available in your state, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes all up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Make sure you hammer Matt Stafford on the Futures MVP line, because absolutely ripping it with my Los Angeles Rams.
Is that in the reading?
Yeah. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Here we go. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. Booyah, boys.
Wow.
How are you?
All right, welcome back to the Basketball Podcast Network. I'm Chris Paul Gear here with Cam Reddish Hasbrook and Drew Holiday Johnson, as well as Logan Chris Mullen. Just thought about that off the top of my head while you were reading that ad. We're sitting here with the we have the Basketball Podcast Network background on our on our thing. Yeah. So yeah, go check out their podcasts. I'm sure they have some.
Strawberry. Here you go.
Do we Drew and Cam are in the same place right now, and they're doing everything they can to make it weird. Do we want to talk about all the Patrice Bergeron freakout?
I think we should.
I'm down to get super depressed right now, boys. Let's go.
Yeah. So Patrice Bergeron basically came out and said, not thinking about contract extensions this year. He's just going to focus on playing out the last year of his contract. And obviously everybody in Bruins Nation decided to assume that he's either retiring or moving on after the season. And regardless of whether you believe that or not, it does bring to the front of mind the fact that this is a 36-year-old man who is, now that David Krejci has gone, the last usable center on your team that has been good, at least in the last year or so. Charlie Coyle, I guess, was good a couple of years ago, but injured last season. So if Patrice Bergeron is gone and you don't do anything to pick up a very good center in the next year or next offseason, Charlie Coyle is your number one center going into
season. I don't know if you've been reading the tweets, but they said Jack Studnick is ripped now, so he's obviously a number one center.
Yeah, Jack Stud.
Jack the Stud Nika.
I will like forward it by saying this. Like, I don't know, I hope this doesn't come around to like smack me in the face in Zdeno Chara style, but like I don't see a situation where Bergeron plays anywhere except for Boston. I think he's either going to re-sign with the Bruins at the end of the season or he's going to retire. Come at me if you think I'm wrong, but I just cannot see. Like, I don't – Chris talks about a lot, hockey players hate moving their shit, that kind of thing. I really would be shocked. Like, the Char one was a little surprising. I'm not – like, I don't think it was terribly surprising. to see Bergeron in any other sweater would be like, I might have to swear off hockey forever. Like, that would hurt. And not just from a fan standpoint, but I really do not see that in the cards. I think it's – I was talking about this with, like, a family friend the other day, but I think it's more along the lines of, like, Bergeron is not the type of person who wants to have a goodbye tour and everybody's giving him gifts and that shit, you know, David Ortiz style. Or I think he's going to be the guy that – the season ends, and
which sucks because I really loved seeing Don Orsillo hand David Ortiz a signed surfboard.
Yeah, no, and I would love to hand him the Bruisin' Bruins 37 drinkability, tasteability plaque. But I just don't think he's the type of person that wants the extra theatrics and stuff like that. I think he just wants to hang him up at the, you know, the season's gonna end and he's gonna feel his time and he's gonna retire and that'll be that, and he'll like live happily ever after, or something like that. But like,
ride off into the sunset.
Exactly, skate off into the sunset. maybe somebody's got some other thoughts, but I really do not think that he's going to play anywhere besides Boston.
I agree, just because in Chara's situation, it wasn't necessarily on his terms. He wanted to keep playing. He wasn't as great of an asset to the Bruins as he was when he was younger, and he wanted to keep playing, though. And so he went elsewhere. The Bruins were done with the cap situation. They couldn't really reel him in. They didn't really have the space. I think that was the right move for the Bruins. But I think in Bergeron's case, I mean, he's still really good. I don't see him being that kind of player that plays till he's like 58 or whatever Chara is now. And I think he definitely – it's going to be on Bergie's terms when he leaves Boston. And like I said, I don't see Bergeron playing more than probably two or three more years. I think he's taken a lot of damage during his career, and I don't see him playing longer than that. So I think it is going to be on Bergie's terms, and in that case, I really don't see him playing anywhere else for that reason. I think Chara was kind of a different story. And I guess Chara is still looking for a team. I don't know what the hell he's up to. But, I think Bergie finishes out in Boston. I would hate to see it be after this year unless it was the Bruins win the cup and he exits with the cup. I think that would be very appropriate, and I'd be totally okay after that. I think the team's going to be in a fucking world of trouble if that's the case. But if they win a cup and he goes out on top, I think that's a very appropriate way. But I could also see it like the Bruins get to the cup and lose, and he's like, fuck this, I'm done. Like, this has been a long road to the cup. Like, I've taken a beating. I think that's it. Maybe the Bruins get a first round exit and he's like, you know what, redo, let's go run it back. But, I think Bergie ends.
I like that you're assuming they make the playoffs. That's
I guess that's another conversation. But I think this is a playoff caliber.
Yeah,
team,
they're still a playoff team. Yeah. I would be. My thing is, like, I didn't realize people were going to get so worked up about that Bergeron comment. Like, I don't think there was anything to read into it. That when I saw people,
Logan, you work in Boston sports media.
That's true. I should know that, but I thought that was such a benign comment. And then I saw people getting like unglued over it, which I think might have slightly been the product of framing by some about how that whole thing unfolded. I would be, you know, of course, I said the same thing about Chara a year ago, but I would be stunned if he played anywhere else. I think if I had to guess, I would think retirement is a very real possibility. I mean, he's been playing forever and he's been playing a top six role pretty much his entire career. Like, that body has been through a lot. And I don't know. I mean, maybe he would do the year-to-year route. I think he really just genuinely knows that. Because the thing is, too, is Don Sweeney said, whatever it was, like a month and a half ago, that the door's open for Bergeron as long as he wants to keep playing in Boston. And I think that is true. I don't think that's just lip service. And I think Bergeron knows that he can play this entire year out, knowing that whatever needs to happen in the offseason, it will. I don't know if that was the understanding with Chara before he left, but I would think from Bergeron's standpoint, he knows that at this point it's not going to be a money thing. And if he really does want to keep playing, they'll find a spot for him. I also don't get the sense he would be the type of guy that would play to the point that he's not good anymore. Like, I could see him sooner being like, well, I can see my game starting to tail off. It really hasn't shown any signs of that so far, but I could see if he for some reason had a downturn this year or in the next few years, that he might start thinking about it from that standpoint. Like, I could never see him wanting to be a liability just so that he could maybe get a shot at another cop.
Yeah. I don't see him fighting for a spot in the league.
Yeah, no, no.
Once his value is diminishing, he's probably going to hang him up.
So I think he's not like Tom Brady, where he doesn't strike me as like the ultimate competitor who, as long as he's got some gas in the tank, no matter where he's playing, he wants to go try and win a championship. Yeah. I think that
Bergeron to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Imagine.
But you guys all made really good points. I think the big differences between Chara and Bergeron are Bergeron's still an elite player. And two, there's kind of the romanticism of playing for one team for your whole career and Chara had played for two teams prior to the Bruins. So that wasn't as much of a consideration. There's a lot of tread on those tires. It's 18 seasons plus a lot of playoffs. And then playing in Olympics, World Cup, a lot of stuff like that. So he's been playing at a high level for a really long time, and that's got to wear on you. So 36 years old, like, not only playing until you're 36, playing as one of the best players in the world and giving everything every night, because you can't be one of the best players in the world if you don't do that. And that includes staying in shape in the off season. And I can't imagine how difficult that is. So, yeah, I mean, if the guy wants to hang him up, I'm never going to fault him for it. But I also agree with Logan, where I think he was just saying, like, don't ask me about my contract. I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on the season.
Yeah.
I mean, because those guys really do get beat to death with those questions. Like, I remember the Krug one being really bad. Like, and part of Torrey Krug's problem was, he said before the season, he was like, I plan to re-sign here. And so every week it was like, do you have an extension yet? And of course he wasn't saying anything. But that one I remember listening to him talk all the time. It's like, this poor guy is just getting beaten down with these questions. So I can see Bergeron taking a pretty hardline stance right in the beginning and just being like, I'm not talking about it this year. Because I don't think he has to either. Like, again, to my original point, like, they'll find a spot for him. I think they are far more amenable to doing that with Patrice Bergeron than they were Zdeno Chara. And so I don't think I don't think either side needs to worry about one just giving up on the other.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention quick is, just from a health standpoint, I mean, like, we've all gone into the legend of Bergeron with the ribs and the separated shoulder and stuff, but you got to remember, it hasn't been an issue the last couple of years, knock on wood, thank God, but this guy's had pretty severe concussion issues in the past too.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the more you slow down, that becomes more of a liability. And kind of like Chris said, I don't see him being the type of person that's going to risk that for an extra season or something like that. Like, I think he understands that that's still something he's got to deal with. And he doesn't want to take one more big injury like that, a concussion like that, to deal with the rest of his life. If, you know, he's had a good career and he's not the person who lives and dies. I mean, it's like weird to think that, like, an athlete who's been that dominant for that long doesn't necessarily live and die by his spot in the sport, but you just don't catch that feeling with him. And that's not to say he's not dedicated or anything like that, but, like, that he understands he has a life outside of hockey, and I don't think he's gonna risk his, especially head health and something like that.
No. Yeah, to go back to the Tom Brady comparison, like, I don't get the sense that Patrice Bergeron is a complete asshole in every part of his life because he's so competitive that he needs to win at everything.
Yeah.
I think that's what Tom Brady is.
Yeah. I think also Tom Brady sits back in the pocket and relies on a good offensive line. Doesn't, you know, Tom Brady, he doesn't, like, puncture lungs and you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to diminish the, like, punishment that Tom Brady's taken over his career, but...
You know what? Tom Brady, now listen.
Famously soft NFL
quarterback. This Tom Brady guy, you know, he's not all they make him out to be. That was my little Mikey impression.
Although I'm pretty sure Tom Brady did get his first NFL start because Drew Brees broke a rib and punctured his lung. So
no, Drew Bledsoe. Wasn't it Drew Bledsoe?
Oh, sorry, yeah, Bledsoe. Yeah.
Oh yes, the Tom Brady, the great New Orleans Saint.
Yeah, I'm famously of the New Orleans Saints.
I have a non-hockey related question for Logan. I don't know if we're ready for anything yet.
Yeah.
So you came in hot, or I guess cold, with the Molson Ice.
That's correct.
What's your opinion on the Molson Labatt? Do you have any take on Molson versus Labatt, or are you just a lover of all Canadians?
I just like Molson. Labatt never really did anything for me. Mm-hmm. Because when
didn't even talk to me.
That's true. I'm very hydrated whenever I drink Labatt. It's like, all right, time to go for a run. Labatt to me is just, I like gag when I see it in liquor stores.
Wow,
just like push it out of the way and just go and get the real stuff. Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Have like a bad experience with Labatt?
No, it just does nothing for me. It's like, well, I guess I might as well drink, you know, Bud Light or even Bush or something like that. Like Labatt just does nothing to me.
Wow. I have another question for you then. So you mentioned pre-pod that you're from Texas.
That's correct.
At what point you moved out or if you were of age. I don't want to expose you for anything, but I am
I was of age, if that alters the line of questioning. I was 18. Like,
do they have – I'm always interested to see how far south the Canadian beers get, because I went to school at the University of Maryland, so I would occasionally find like a Molson or Labatt, but it's way more common in upstate New York where I'm from. Do they have Canadian beer in Texas, or is that like shunned upon?
I'm just dying that Logan said 18 is of age in Texas.
Oh, well, so I thought he meant like I was an adult. I didn't fully understand the line of questioning. So no, I was definitely not of age at that point.
To be in a store, did you see?
Yeah, no, I actually don't have an answer for that, and I was listening. I was listening. I wasn't understanding to that question.
That's fine. Yes, of age. I don't know what you're doing with the Molsons. I don't know how much you love them, but I don't want
to. My dad would always talk about how when he lived in Steubenville, Ohio, growing up, or like when he was like 18 or 19, the drinking age in Ohio was 21, and it was 18 in West Virginia, and he lived like on the West Virginia border. Yeah. And I was like, what a weird existence where you could just drive a state over, go to the bar, and then come back to your town in Ohio.
You got 3 years until you can drink in your hometown.
Yeah,
my girlfriend used to. Her first job was in Steubenville. I'll text her, so I was not expecting a Steubenville reference.
What
do you know?
I knew like three kids from high school because there are a lot of Catholics in my town that went to Franciscan. So big Catholic population in Steubenville, Ohio.
Sounds like a great place.
Yeah, my father was not one of them, from what I know. But
it sounds pretty stupid.
Stupendous.
I was hoping Drew was going there, but didn't actually go anywhere.
Thank you. That's me in a nutshell right there.
Drew is one big misdirect.
That's why we have him. It's the wild card.
Wild card, yep. Gotta have one.
You do.
You can't see me.
All right, Logan, do you have any other thoughts on the off-season moves that the Bruins have done? We talked them to death like early in the off season when all the signings came in. And then I think we took a pretty big break from it kind of assumed no one wanted to hear us talk about it anymore. But now that we've got a guest who knows what he's talking about, maybe you want to dive into some of those thoughts.
Yeah.
Any hot Derek Forbort takes?
No, I don't have any hot Derek Forbort takes. This might actually negate my entire Brandon Carlo thing, but as somebody who really likes John Moore, I think that the Derek Forbort moment.
What?
I think
this podcast just grew by an hour. Let's dive into this one.
Wow.
What the fuck?
So,
John Moore, famously the anti-Carlo.
So just a quick, we'll get to that in a second. But the Derek Forbort, the reason I'm connecting it to John Moore is like I think he's a fine enough player. Like I don't know. You're not winning or losing anything based on the performance of Derek Forbort. But he took a contract that he absolutely should have taken, much like John Moore did in 2018. And so if he gets raked through the coals for being precisely who he's been his entire career, that is far less of an indictment of him than it is of anybody else. The John Moore thing, I actually think this will be a very big bounce back year for John Moore, because he was actually okay in 2018. He is absolutely like a third pairing defenseman, but he is unequivocally, in terms of pure skating ability, the best skater that the Bruins have on defense. And when you think about the fact that he had been fighting through a hip injury, like last year, he clearly looked off. And I think that a lot of John Moore's shortcomings in terms of like raw skill is actually not negated, but offset by the fact that he is a very good skater. So when he looked completely lost last year, like I think it was against Pittsburgh, like one of the final games before they probably said, John, like, you need to get surgery. He couldn't move at all. Like, his lateral movement was awful. And so imagine where your best asset is your skating ability and you have a brutal hip injury. Like, that is absolutely going to knock you off. And, you know, the reason he was underwhelming the year before was because he played through a shoulder injury in the postseason the year before. Like, they trusted John Moore with one shoulder in game 7 of the cup final before they trusted Connor Clifton, and
which might have been a mistake.
Yes. You know, debate amongst yourselves about whether or not that was the right call. But I think that he is, you know, John Moore is what he is. He's like a fifth or sixth defenseman, but he is, if people ignored the contract, I guess he would be a far more useful player than people understand, because you talk about knowing what you're getting into with Brandon Carlo. Like, John Moore with a healthy hip, I would think, is far more that guy where, like, okay, sometimes he is your seventh defenseman and you probably shouldn't be paying a guy $2.75 million to be your seventh defenseman, but probably whenever not. The Bruins needed to plug in and play a guy, it was always John Moore, and you could always play him for 20 or Stephen Kampfer, and you could always play Moore 20 minutes a night, for better or for worse. Yeah. But that, so is
for better or for worse, take it with a grain of salt or not, but I've got the Evolving Hockey page up. Love doing this.
I'm strictly eye test with John Moore, so
this is your grain of salt. 24th percentile offensively, 14th percentile defensively, overall 11th percentile over the last three seasons combined.
What about handsomeness? Is that handsomeness in there or no?
The hair is great. You can't teach that kind of hair.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about.
My opinion is John Moore, Brad Stewart, and Hal Gill walk into a bar and they kicked out because they fucking suck. That's my
opinion. No, you're not shit-talking Hal Gill like that, dude. I used to run him in NHL.
Oh, he was like Chara, except there was no fucking upside. He was just like, I'm gonna go to the Habs now. Like, that's his fucking career. I don't...
He was like a Norris Trophy winner, but he was scratched every night.
I think the Bruins won the Norris for scratching.
Come for Drew's hot Hal Gill takes, stay for me calling Logan Mullen somebody who knows what he's talking about and then talking up John Moore.
Yeah, I don't think I unholstered that one at the wedding. So you probably didn't know.
I think Logan's had too many Molsons.
A lot more Mike Riley talk, a lot less John Moore talk.
We covered Mike Riley pretty in depth.
It sounds
way.
Like, yeah, which also that's on brand. So that's
I told you guys I was afraid of drinking the Molson ice.
That's what happens. He starts one most nice. It's like at the end of the commercial, they have all the warnings about the what it's going to do to you. You may start talking up John Moore at the end.
So I have a tangentially related story to that. So it's become something of a bit between me and my coworkers, my affinity for John Moore and Joakim Nordstrom. So in order to kind of play that up a little bit, I printed out their headshots and I stapled them to my cubicle, the office. And so one day, this was 2019, right before the season started, a few Bruins players had to film stuff in the Nessun studio. So they come up the stairs. In order to get to the studio, you have to walk past my desk. And so I've got these two headshots, clear as day, of John Moore and Joakim Nordstrom right there. And Tuukka Rask walks up the stairs, and he didn't know where he was going. So he, like, looks over. And it's literally like looking from here to this door behind me. And he's like, hey, do you know how I get to the studio? And I was like, yeah, like, it's, you know, it's right back there, like, pointing him in the direction. And he's like, okay, cool. And he, like, looks at me a little bit and then just walks away. And I'm like, hey, he was definitely wondering what those two headshots were.
He was lucky he didn't come around the corner and see the two Garask headshot with the smooch.
Well, something similar happened that I actually haven't had confirmed. I don't think anybody knows this, but similarly, my work icon on like Microsoft stuff is I made it the joking Nordstrom headshot to continue like leaning into this bit. And I didn't realize that it links it to your Outlook image. So there's one time I had to email Bruins PR for an interview request. And I was like, you know what? I think I just sent this email. These guys just saw and it's a headshot of Joakim Nordstrom. So right after that, I changed it. So I'm trying to soften on that bit a little bit.
Could come back to bite you.
Yeah. Just completely innocuous. And now they're like, what's wrong with this guy?
Love it.
I don't know if we're going to top that.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, Logan, thanks for joining us. This was awesome. If you're open to the experience, we'll have you back sometime.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. We're going to make you drink a little bass next time. He's going to start fanboying over fucking Nicholas Svedberg or something.
Well, think of a wager of some kind, and then if I lose, I'll drink a little bass.
I love it. So, how about Brandon Carlo point totals?
It's John Moore versus Brandon Carlo point total.
Yes, yes.
Do I get like a handicap of some sorts? Like, do I get
admit John
two?
Well, then John Moore's John Moore's gonna play less than Brandon Carlo. I was coaching the team, that's not how it would be, but
yeah, we'll do I would say points per game, but I don't know if that's fair. John Moore, I think, is more likely to.
John Moore scores a hat trick and plays seven games all year.
John Moore is the Patrice Bergeron replacement.
John Moore, the point per game defenseman.
John Moore, number one center and captain.
I would think, yeah, I think John Moore, what's a reasonable total?
Zero.
Over under three. I don't know. How many points did he have last year? Like,
Last year he played like three games. So people don't understand how good he was with the Devils. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, but when he went back to New Jersey for the first time, they literally gave him a tribute video and he was like their overtime goal king. Like, John, like, whenever they went to overtime, John Moore was always out there and he was always scoring game winners. So if the Bruins get into a lot of overtime games, you guys could be in big trouble this year.
See, my opinion is John Moore in New Jersey walk into a bar and they both fucking suck.
All right, so John Moore.
Didn't he have 15 or something in
2018-19, he had 13.
Yeah.
He had two last year and three the year before. Three in 24 games the year before. That's a big sample size. But
why don't we do point per game between Carlo and Moore, but you have to set a minimum games played for Moore? I don't know what would be fair. That could immediately make me look like a moron, where it's like, you got to set it at 15 games. You got to put it at least 15 games for John Moore.
Well, they are playing 82 this year, so that's good.
I don't know. What's the flip side of this bet? What if you win?
We drink Molson Ices.
We buy him a Molson Ice.
I have to find Molson Ice in San Diego.
Yeah.
They got a name, so we'll figure it out.
Chris has to fly to Canada to pick up some Molson.
That's good. I like it.
No, he flies to Maine and then hangs out with us, but then he has to drive up to the border and hop a fence or something.
He's got to drive 7 hours north to fucking...
I feel like I could probably just fly to Seattle and that would be good enough.
They might have that, yeah.
You gotta cross. You'd probably just go to Vancouver. You wouldn't come out here.
Yeah.
Sorry, Canada's a big country.
Yeah.
It's almost as wide as the United States.
You know, when I was 18, I would have been of age in Canada.
Exactly. Or in West Virginia. In
West Virginia in the 70s.
And let's be honest, in West Virginia, everybody's of age. Let's be honest.
All right.
Theo's telling me this episode's over.
Yeah.
thanks for joining us, Logan. Thank you for listening, listeners. Our listenership has been very good. Drew wants to say something.
I just want to say, Logan, where can we find you? Like Twitter and all
that. Oh yeah. That's a good question. Where can you find me? All right. So on Twitter,
you can find him at weddings.
You can find me at weddings of people who we all know. Yeah. Of Chris's childhood friends and friends of my wife that I've gotten to know. So on Twitter, it's by Logan Mullen. And then the Ness and Bruins podcast. I don't know if this is competition or we don't drink on ours.
Ness and is
the
demographics are completely different. So the Ness and Bruins podcast, we've been taking a break, but we'll be back next week. And then Nesson.com. And that's, I don't know, it's probably more than enough exposure to me than anybody needs. So.
All right, fair enough. Drew, where can we find your work?
Oh, yo.
Yeah, hey, Drew, welcome to Portland, man.
Thank you.
Cheers. Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah, let me give a little, there you go.
You can follow me as always at Dube Schmoo, but if you want if you're interested in news in South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, or Scarborough, Maine, follow me at DDJ Writes. That's Writes as in, you know, you're right with a pencil, not like...
Yeah, not like your constitutional rights.
Yeah, or just like...
Which also, you should brush up on your constitutional rights, because I've been on Twitter lately, guys. A lot of you don't know what your First Amendment rights are. You've been also, wildly mistaking those. So
shouts to Shukri Rights. We like that guy.
Yeah. I would like to have a podcast with
once,
him sometime. So
once next. In future guest of the pod.
Yeah. All right, well, Logan, thanks. It's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Along. Yeah, thanks for dragging me along, boys. Yeah.
I look forward to you slugging a tall boy, which we definitely agreed on beforehand, Labatt, in one chug later on.
Well, oh, again, God.
Definitely pre-mentioned and you signed the agreement. So
every time gone. Brandon Scorlo... Brandon Scorlo.
No, no.
That may be the best Freudian slip of all time. anytime he scores a point, you're gonna be
Brandon Rockets or Shard Carlo.